and welcome to Monday Night Playhouse. I'm Damiano Pietropaolo, and I'm here at the Royal George Theatre in Niagara-on-the-Lake, home of the Shaw Festival. I'm here with Artistic Director Jackie Maxwell for the second of this season's Bell Canada Reading Series. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, Damiano.
Once again, you have a full house for the show.
Yep. People love coming in for a lunchtime treat.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And what are we about to hear?
Well, Thornton Wilder is really well known, of course, for Our Town and the Skin of Our Teeth.
Yes, very popular on radio, too.
Mm-hmm. So Dennis Johnson, our director, chose two delightful one-act plays by Wilder, Queens of France and Love and How to Cure It. They're not so well known, rarely performed, I think. The first one is all about a New Orleans lawyer who's benefiting enormously from the vanities of three of his clients. And the second one features a theatrical troupe of characters and looks at the old and the young at heart.
Well, we're all young at heart, I hope. Thank you, Jackie. Shall we?
Let's go.
Queens of France by Thornton Wilder. We find ourselves in a lawyer's office in New Orleans in 1869. The door to the street is hung with a reed curtain through which you can glimpse a public park in sunshine. A small bell tinkles. After a pause, it rings again. An attractive young woman pushes the reeds apart and peers in. Monsieur Cahusac, a dry little man with sharp black eyes, enters from an inner room.
This letter, you have asked me to come and see you.
Your name, madame?
Mademoiselle Marie Sédonie Cresseau, monsieur.
Yes. Kindly be seated, mademoiselle.
Monsieur Cahusac goes to his desk and opens a great many drawers, collecting documents from each one.
Mademoiselle, this interview is to be regarded by you as strictly confidential.
Yes, monsieur.
May I ask if mademoiselle is able to bear the shock of surprise, of good or bad news?
Why, yes, monsieur.
Then if you are Mademoiselle Marie Sidonie Cresseau, the daughter of Baptiste Antenor Cresseau, it is my duty to inform you that you are in danger.
I am in danger, monsieur.
He returns to his desk, opens further drawers, and returns with more papers.
Mademoiselle, in addition to my duties as a lawyer in this city, I am the representative here of a historical society in Paris. Will you please try and follow me, mademoiselle? This historical society has been engaged in tracing the descendants of the true heir to the French throne. As you know, at the time of the revolution, in 1795, to be exact, mademoiselle, the true, lawful, and legitimate heir to the French throne disappeared. It was rumored that this boy, who was then 10 years old, came to America and lived for a time in New Orleans. We now know that the rumor was true. We now know that he here begot legitimate issue, that this legitimate issue in turn begot legitimate issue, and that...
Mademoiselle Cresseau suddenly starts searching in her shopping bag.
Mademoiselle, may I have the honor of your attention a little longer?
My fan, monsieur.
She finds it and begins to fan herself wildly.
Monsieur, what danger am I in?
If mademoiselle will exercise one moment's patience, she will know all. That legitimate issue here begot legitimate issue, and the royal line of France has been traced to a certain Baptiste Antenor Cresseau.
But, Baptiste?
Mademoiselle, can you prove that you are the daughter of Baptiste Antenor Cresseau?
Why?
Mademoiselle, have you a certificate of your parents' marriage?
Yes, monsieur.
If it turns out to be valid, and if it is true that you have no true, lawful, and legitimate brother...
No, monsieur.
Then, mademoiselle, I have nothing further to do than to announce to you that you are the true and long-lost heir to the throne of France.
Monsieur Cahusac approaches her with great dignity and kisses her hand. Marie Sidonie begins to cry. He goes to the desk and pours a glass of water for her.
Your Royal Highness.
Mr. Cahusac, I am very sorry. But there must be some mistake. My father was a poor sailor. A poor sailor.
A distinguished and esteemed navigator.
A poor sailor.
Navigator.
Mister, what danger am I in?
As your Royal Highness knows, there are several families in New Orleans that claim without documents, without proof, that pretend to the blood royal. The danger from them, however, is not great. The real danger is from France, from the impassioned Republicans.
Impassioned?
But your Royal Highness has only to put herself into my hands.
Please do not call me your Royal Highness.
You give me permission to call you Madame de Clisson?
Yes, monsieur. Mademoiselle Clisson. I am Marie Sidonie Clisson.
Am I mistaken in saying that you have children?
Yes, monsieur. I have three children.
Madame, from now on, thousands of eyes will be fixed upon you. The eyes of the whole world, madame. I cannot urge you too strongly to be very discreet, to be very circumspect.
Monsieur Cahusac, I do not wish to have anything to do with this. There is a mistake somewhere. I thank you very much, but there is a mistake somewhere. I do not know where. I must go now.
But, madame, you do not know what you are doing. Your rank cannot be dismissed as easily as that. Do you not know that in a month or two, all the newspapers in the world, including the New Orleans Times-Picayune, will publish your name? The first nobles of France will cross the ocean to call upon you. The Bishop of Louisiana will call upon you. The mayor...
No, no!
You will be given a great deal of money and several palaces.
No, no!
And a guard of soldiers to protect you.
No, no!
You will be made president of Le Petit Salon and queen of the Mardi Gras. Another sip of water, your Royal Highness.
Oh, monsieur, what shall I do? Oh, monsieur, save me. I do not want the bishop or the mayor.
You ask me what you shall do?
Oh, yes, oh, my God.
For the present, return to your home and lie down. A little rest and a little reflection will tell you what you have to do. Then come and see me Thursday morning.
I think there must be a mistake somewhere.
May I be permitted to ask Madame de Clisson a question? Could I have the privilege of presenting her, until the great announcement takes place, with a small gift of money?
No, no.
The Historical Society is not rich. The Historical Society has difficulty in pursuing the search for the last documents that will confirm Madame's exalted rank. But they would be very happy to advance a certain sum to Madame, subscribed by her devoted subjects.
Please, no. I do not wish any. I must go now.
Let me beg Madame not to be alarmed. For the present, a little rest and reflection. Your obedient servant and devoted subject.
Goodbye. Good morning, Monsieur Cahusac. Oh, Mr. Cahusac, do not let the bishop come and see me. The mayor, yes, but not the bishop.
As Marie Sidonie slips out, Madame Pujol comes through the reed curtain, a plump little bourgeoise in black. Mr. Cahusac kisses her graciously extended hand.
Good morning, Monsieur Cahusac.
Your Royal Highness.
What business can you possibly be having with that dreadful Marie Cresseau? Do you not know that she is an abandoned woman?
Alas, we are in the world, Your Royal Highness. For the present, I must earn a living as best I can. Mademoiselle Cresseau is arranging about the purchase of a house and garden.
Purchase, Monsieur Cahusac? Puh! You know very well that she has half a dozen houses and gardens already. She persuades every one of her lovers to give her a little house and garden. She's beginning to own the whole parish of Saint-Magloire.
Will your Royal Highness condescend to sit down? And how is the royal family this morning?
Only so-so, Monsieur Cahusac.
The Archduchess of Tuscany?
A cold. One of her colds. I sometimes think the dear child will never live to see her pearls.
And the Dauphin, your Royal Highness?
Still amusing himself in the city, as young men will. Wine, gambling, bad company. At least it keeps him out of harm.
And the Duke of Burgundy?
Imagine, the poor child has a sty in his eye.
In which eye, madame?
In the left.
Oh. And the Prince of Lorraine and the Duke of Berry?
They are fairly well, but they seem to mope in their cradle. Their first teeth, my dear Chamberlain.
And your husband, madame?
Ah. From now on, we are never to mention him again. While we are discussing these matters, it is to be understood that he is my husband in a manner of speaking only. He has no part in my true life. He has chosen to scoff at my birth and my rank, but he will see what he will see. Naturally, I have not told him about the proofs that you and I have collected. I have not the heart to let him see how unimportant he will become.
Unimportant indeed.
So remember, we do not mention him in the same breath with these matters.
You must trust me, madame. And your health, your Royal Highness?
Oh, very well, thank you. Excellent. I used to do quite poorly, as you remember. But since this wonderful news, I have been more than well. God be praised.
I beg of you to do nothing unwise. I beg of you. The little new life we are all anticipating.
Have no fear, my dear Chamberlain. What is dear to France is dear to me.
When I think, madame, of how soon we shall be able to announce your rank, when I think that this time next year you will be enjoying all the honors and privileges that are your due, I am filled with a pious joy.
God's will be done. God's will be done.
At all events, I am particularly happy to see that your Royal Highness is in the best of health, for I have had some disappointing news.
Chamberlain, you are not going to tell me that Germany has at last declared war upon my country?
No, madame.
Oh, you greatly frightened me last week. I could scarcely sleep. Such burdens as I have. My husband tells me that I cried out in my sleep the words, Paris, I come.
Sublime, madame.
Paris, I come. Like that. I cried out twice in my sleep. Paris, I come. Oh, these are anxious times. I am on my way to the cathedral now. This Bismarck does not understand me. We must avoid a war at all costs, Monsieur Cahusac. Well then, what is your news?
My anxiety at present is more personal. The Historical Society in Paris is now confirming the last proofs of your claim. They have secretaries at work in all the archives, Madrid, Vienna, Constantinople.
Oh, Constantinople!
All this requires a good deal of money, and the society is not rich. We have been driven to a painful decision. The society must sell one of the royal jewels, or one of the royal fournitures which I am guarding upstairs. The Historical Society has written me, madame, ordering me to send them at once the royal christening robe.
Never!
The very robe under which Charlemagne was christened, the Charles, the Henri's, the Louis's, to lie under a glass in the Louvre. And this is particularly painful to me because I had hoped it was in fact the dream of my life to see at least one of your children christened under all those fleur-de-lis.
It shall not go to the Louvre. I forbid it.
But what can I do? I offered them the scepter. I offered them the orb. I even offered them the mug which your Royal Highness has already purchased. But no, the christening robe it must be.
It shall not leave America. How much are they asking for it?
Oh, madame, since it is the Ministry of Museums and Monuments, they are asking a great many thousands of francs.
And how much would they ask their queen?
Madame, Madame, I cannot see you purchasing those things which are rightly yours.
I will purchase it. I shall sell the house on the Chaussée Sainte-Anne.
If your majesty will give $500 of her money, I shall add 500 of my own.
500? 500? Oh, be repaid
well,
many times, my dear chamberlain, when I am restored to my position. Tomorrow at 3, I shall bring you the papers for the sale of the house. You will do everything quietly. My husband will be told about it in due time.
I understand. I shall be very discreet.
The bell rings again. Monsieur Cahusac turns to the door as Mademoiselle Poitevin starts to enter.
I shall be free to see you in a few moments, mademoiselle. Madame Puchot has still some details to discuss with me.
I cannot wait long, Monsieur Cahusac.
A few minutes in the park, thank you, mademoiselle.
Has that poor girl business with a lawyer, Monsieur Cahusac? A poor school teacher like that?
Mademoiselle Poitevin has taken it into her head to make her will.
3 chairs and a broken plate. Well, tomorrow at 3. I am now going to the cathedral. I do not forget the great responsibilities for which I must prepare myself. The army, the navy, the treasury, the appointment of bishops. When I am dead, my dear chamberlain.
Madame!
No, no. Even I must die someday. When I am dead, when I am laid with my ancestors, let it never be said of me. By the way, where shall I be laid?
In the Church of Saint-Denis, Your Royal Highness.
Not in Notre Dame?
No, Madame.
Not in Notre Dame. Well, we will cross those bridges when we get to them. Good morning, and all my thanks, my dear chamberlain.
Your Highness's most obedient servant and devoted subject.
Pray for us.
Madame Pujol goes out beautifully. And as she does, Monsieur Cahusac follows her to the door and bows to Mademoiselle Poitevin in the street.
Now, mademoiselle, if you will have the goodness to enter.
Mademoiselle Poitevin does so, a tall and indignant spinster.
Monsieur Cahusac, it is something new for you to keep me waiting in the public square while you carry on your wretched little business with a vulgar woman like Madame Pujol. When I condescend to call upon you, my good man, you will have the goodness to receive me at once. Either I am or I am not Henriette, Queen of France, Queen of Navarre and Aquitania. It is not fitting that we cool our heels on a public bench among the nursemaids of remote New Orleans. It is hard enough for me to hide myself as a schoolmistress in this city without having to suffer further humiliation at your hands. Is there no respect due to the blood of Charlemagne?
Madame?
Oh, sir, are you bored and overfed on the company of queens?
Madame?
You are busy with the law. Good. Know then, la loi, c'est moi. Now, what is it you have to say?
Your Royal Highness, I have received a letter from France. There is some discouraging news.
No, I cannot afford to buy another thing. I possess the scepter and the orb. Sell the rest to the Louvre if you must. I can buy them back when my rank is announced.
Alas.
What do you mean, alas?
Will Your Royal Highness condescend to read the letter I have received from France?
Have they no bread? Give them cake. It's too long. It's too long. What does it say?
It is from the secretary of the Historical Society. The society remains convinced that you are the true and long-sought heir to the throne of France.
Convinced? Convinced? I should hope so.
But to make this conviction public, madame, to announce it throughout the newspapers of the world, including the New Orleans Times-Picayune.
Yes, go on.
To establish your claim among all your rivals. To establish your claim beyond any possible ridicule.
Ridicule?
All they lack is one little document. One little but important document. They had hoped to find it in the archives of Madrid. Madame, it is not there.
It is not there? Then where is it?
We do not know, Your Royal Highness. We are in despair.
Oh, ridicule. Monsieur Cahusac!
It may be in Constantinople. It may be in Vienna. Naturally, we shall continue to search for it. We shall continue to search for generations, for centuries, if need be. But I must confess, this is a very discouraging blow.
Generations? Centuries? I'm not a young girl, Monsieur Cahusac. The letter says over and over again that I am heir to the throne.
Monsieur Cahusac discreetly offers her a glass of water.
Thank you.
Madame, you should know that the society suspects the lost document to be in your possession. The society feels sure that the document has been handed down from generation to generation in your family.
In my possession?
Madame, are you concealing something from us?
Why, no.
Are you playing with us as a cat plays with a mouse?
No, indeed, I'm not.
Why is that paper not in Madrid, or in Vienna, or in Constantinople? Because it is in your house. You live in what was once your father's house, do you not?
Yes, I do.
Go back to it. Look through every old trunk.
Every old trunk?
Examine especially the linings. Look through all the tables and desks. Pry into the joints. You will find perhaps a secret drawer, a secret panel.
Monsieur Cahusac.
Examine the walls. Examine the boards of the floor. It may be hidden under them.
I will. I'll go now.
Have you any old clothes of your father?
Yes, I have.
It may be sewn into the lining.
I'll look.
Madame, in what suit of clothes was your father buried?
In his vest, monsieur.
Take particular pains to look under all steps. These kinds of document are frequently found under steps. You will find it. If it is not in Madrid, it is there.
But if I can't find it... No one will ever know that I am the Queen of France. I am very much afraid, Monsieur Cahusac, that I shall never find that document in my four rooms. I know every inch of them. But I shall look. Oh, it is all very strange. You know, Monsieur Cahusac, I think there may have been a mistake somewhere. It was so beautiful while it lasted. It made even school teaching a pleasure. Monsieur, and my memoirs. I've just written my memoirs up to the moment when your wonderful announcement came to me. The account of my childhood incognito. The little girl in Louisiana who did not guess the great things before her. But before I go, may I ask something of you? Will you have the Historical Society write me a letter saying that they seriously think I may be the person they are looking for? I wish to keep the letter in the trunk with the orb and the scepter. You know, the more I think of it, I think there must have been a mistake somewhere.
The very letter you have in mind is here, madame.
Thank you. And Monsieur Cahusac, may I ask another favor of you?
Certainly, madame.
Please, never mention this whole affair to anyone in New Orleans.
Madame, not unless you wish it.
Good morning. Good morning, and thank you.
Her handkerchief to one eye, she goes out. As Monsieur Cahusac goes to his desk, the bell rings once more. The reed curtain is parted, and a young boy pushes in a wheelchair containing a woman of some 100 years of age. She is wrapped in shawls, like a mummy, and wears a scarf about her head and green spectacles on her nose. The mummy extends a hand, which Monsieur Cahusac kisses devotedly.
Your Royal Highness.
As the curtain slowly falls.
You've just heard Queens of France by Thornton Wilder in our second week of the Bell Canada Reading Series from the Shaw Festival, now in its seventh season. The series is recorded live at the Royal George Theatre in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario. Join us now as we return for part two of tonight's presentation, another short play by Thornton Wilder on the incurable aspects of love.
Love and How to Cure It by Thornton Wilder. The stage of the Tivoli Palace of Music, Soho, in 1895. Bare, dusty, and cold. The stage is dark, save for a gas jet downstage and an oil lamp on the table at the back. Linda, a beautiful girl in a white ballet dress, is practicing steps and bending exercises. She is about 16. At the table at the back sits Joey, a stout comedian, along with Rowena, a mature soubrette. They are reading a pink theatrical and sporting weekly. The silence is broken only by the whispered counting of Linda at her practice.
They've put off the rehearsal. Mark my words, it's after 8:30 now. They must have got word to the others somehow, or else we understood the day wrong.
Yeah.
Ooh, Linda! The paper says Marjorie Fitzmaurice has an engagement. An Alibaba and the 40 Thieves company that Moss has collected for Folkestone, Brighton in the Piers. She must have got better. Hey, you better take a rest, dearie. You'll be all blown.
It's 9:00. I can hear the chimes.
Joey puts down the paper, stretches, and yawns. Rowena picks up her chair, brings it down toward the footlights, and starts supervising Linda's movements.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Whatever are you doing with your hands, child? Madame Angelelli didn't teach anything like that. Bend them back like you was discovering a flower by surprise. That's right. Oopsie.
Daisy, that's the way.
Now that's enough kicks for one night. If you must do any more, just stick to the knee highs. There's no rehearsal. We might just as well go home. It was all a mistake somehow.
No, no, I don't want to go home. Besides, I'm hungry. Ask Joey to go round the corner and buy some fish and chips.
Goodness, I never saw such an eater. Well, I have two kippers here I was going to set on for breakfast. Joey, there's a stove downstairs still in there.
Yes.
There you are. We could have a little supper and ask Joey. I've a packet of tea in me bag. How would you like that, Angel?
Lovely.
Joey, how would you like a little supper on the stage with kipper and tea and everything nice?
Like it? I'm that starved I can eat bones and all.
What's more, I'll cook it for you. I'm the best little cooker of a kipper for a copper you could hope to see.
You could use that in a song someday, Joey.
I'll just go next door, get a spoonful of butter.
There's sixpence. Get some milk for the tea, too. Put some water on as you go out, and I'll be down in a minute to make the tea.
Won't be a minute, my dears.
As he hurries out, Linda stops her exercise and examines attentively each of the soles of her slippers.
Joey must have cooked thousands of kippers in his day. All those last years when his wife was ill, he cooked everything for her. Good old Joey. He's a loss without her. And he wants me to talk about her all the time. Only he doesn't want to bring her into the conversation first. You know, Henrietta Duveau was wonderful. But I can't talk about her forever. Linda, whatever are you thinking about all the time?
Nothing.
Oh, don't you say nothing. Come now, tell your auntie. What is it you keep turning over in your mind?
Well, almost nothing. Except that I'm going to be shot any minute.
Don't say such things, dearie. No one's going to shoot you. You'd be ashamed to say such things.
He's out waiting in the street this very minute.
What? He went back to his university, didn't he? He's a student. They don't let them come to London whenever they want.
I don't care. Let him shoot me. I wish I'd never seen him. What was he doing, anyway? Worming his way into Madame Angelelli's soirees. He ought to have stayed among his own people.
I'm going out into the street this minute to see if he's there. I can get the police after him for rounding a poor girl, so what's his name?
Arthur Warburton. I tell you, I don't care if he shoots me.
Now, I won't have you saying things like that, never mind. If he's out there, Joey will go and get him. We'll have a talk. When did you see him last?
Sunday. We had tea at Richmond and went boating on the river.
Did you let him kiss you?
I let him kiss me once when we floated under some willow trees. And then he kept talking so hot-headed that I didn't let him kiss me again, and I liked him less and less. All the way back on the bus, I didn't pay any attention to him. Just looked into the street and said yes and no. And then I told him I was too busy to see him this week. I don't want to see him again. Aunt Rowena, he breathes so hard.
He didn't look like he was rough and nasty.
He's not rough and nasty. He just suffers.
Yeah, I know him.
Aunt Rowena, isn't there any way discovered to make a man get over loving you? Can it be cured?
Rowena does not answer. She walks back to the table in the corner.
Give me an iron, will you, with this table. We'll bring it nearer to the gas jet. There. Dearie, what makes you say he's thinking of shooting you?
He looked all crazy and said I oughtn't to be alive. He said if I didn't marry him...
Marry him? He asked you to marry him? Oh, Linda, you are a funny girl not to tell me these things before. Why'd you keep everything so secret, dearie?
I didn't think that was a secret. I don't want to marry him.
Well, now, try and remember what he said about shooting.
He was standing at the door saying goodbye. I was playing with the key in my hand to show him I was in a hurry to be done with him. He said he couldn't think of anything but me, that he couldn't live without me, and so on. And then he asked me, was there someone else I loved instead of him? And I said, no. And he said, how about that Italian fellow at Madame Angelelli's soiree? And I said, no, not in 1,000 years. He meant Mario. And then he started to cry and take on terrible. Imagine being jealous of Mario.
I'll teach that young man a lesson. That's what I'll do.
And then he was trembling all over, and he took up the edge of my coat and cried, "People like me ought not to be alive. Nature ought not to allow such soulless beauties like I." "I ought not to be alive," he said. "I ought not to be alive."
Oh, someone's pounding on the street door down there. Joey must have dropped the latch.
It's Arthur.
Don't be foolish.
I know in my bones it's him.
It's a gentleman to see you, Linda. Says his name is Warburton.
Yes. Send him up.
Kipper's almost ready. Water's boiling, Rowena. What are you going to do about this visitor?
Listen, dearie, I want to look at this Arthur again. You ask him pretty to have supper with us.
Oh, Aunt Rowena, I couldn't eat.
This is serious. This is serious, Linda. Now, you ask him to supper and send him round the corner for some bitters. In the meantime, I'll catch a minute to tell Joey how we must watch him.
I don't care if he shoots me. It's nothing to me.
In the gloom at the back, Arthur appears. He is wearing an opera hat and cape.
Good evening, Linda.
Hello, Arthur. Arthur, I'd like you to meet my aunt, Mrs. Rowena Stoker.
It's a great pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Stoker. I hope I'm not intruding. I was just passing by, and I thought,
We thought there was going to be a rehearsal of the new panto we're engaged for, Mr. Warburton, but nobody showed up, so like as not we mistook the day. Linda's just been practising a few steps. For practice. Haven't you, Dovey?
Arthur, we were just going to have a little supper. We hope you'll have some with us. Just a kippered herring and some tea.
Oh, that's awfully good of you. I've just come from dinner, but I hope you won't mind if I sit by you, Mrs. Stoker.
Oh, suit yourself, I always say. It isn't very attractive in an empty theatre. But you must have something. Oh, yes.
Perhaps you'd like to do us a favour, Arthur. Joey's downstairs doing the cooking and can't go. Perhaps you'd like to go down to the corner and bring us a jug of ale and bitters.
Oh, I have a shilling here. Somewhere.
Aunt Rowena, perhaps Arthur is dressed too grand to go to a pub.
Oh, the pubs in this street is used to us coming in all kinds of costumes, Mr. Warburton. They'll think you're rehearsing for a society play.
I'll be right back. I'll only be a minute, Mrs. Stoker.
That poor boy is off his head for fair. Whew, makes me feel all old just to see him. But I imagine he's quite a nice young man when he's got his senses. Oh, never mind, Linda. Nobody wants you to marry anybody you don't want to marry. Has he been drinking, dearie, or does he just look that way?
He just looks that way.
Joey comes back with cups, knives and forks.
Where's the Duke?
He's gone to the corner for some ale and bitters. Thank God he's eaten already. Now, Joey, listen. This young man is off his head about Linda, crazy for fear. Now, this is serious. Linda says he talks wild and might even be thinking of shooting her. Well, the papers are full of such things, Joey, and plays are full of it. It might be, it might be.
Well, I've heard about such things, but it never happened in my family.
Well, just the same, we must take steps. Joey, I'll have him take his cape off. You take it downstairs and see if there's anything in the pocket.
What in the pocket?
Oh, one of those small guns.
Yes, of course, there's one in his pocket. I know there is.
It would be in his cape so as not to bulge his other pockets. Listen, Joey, if there is a gun there, you take out the bullets and then put the gun back into his pocket empty, see? Then bring the cape back again. If this boy is going to shoot Linda, he's going to shoot her tonight so we can have a good heart-to-heart talk about it.
Yes, and then call the police, that's what.
No. This is a thing police and prisons can't cure. Now, Joey, if you find a gun in his pocket and have done what I told you, you come back on the stage whistling one of your songs. Whistle your song about bank holidays, you know, my holiday girl and holiday bus.
Righto.
Now, Linda, you act just natural. Let him have his murder and get it out of his system. Yes! You know I like the boy, and I don't hold it against him. When we're 21 years old, we all have a few drops of crazy melodrama in us.
Oh, I hate him. I hate him. Why can't he let me be?
Yes, yes, that's love.
Auntie, can't it be cured? Can't you make him just forget me?
Well, Dovey, they say there are some ways. Some say you can make fun of him and mock him out of it. And some say you can show yourself up at your worst or pretend you're worse than you are. But I say there's only one way to cure that kind of love when it's feverish and all upset. Only love can cure love. Only being interested, only being real interested and fond of him can... Ah. Oh, it's all right, dearie, don't you get jumpy. It's a lucky chance to get things cleared up. Only remember this. I like him. I like him. He's just somebody's boy that's not well for a few weeks.
He breathes too hard.
Arthur comes back in, followed by Joey. Arthur's hands are laden with bundles and bottles.
Why, Mr. Warburton, I never seen such a lot. Whatever did you find to bring? Chips? Oh, salami? Oh, I don't know what all. This is a feast. Joey, help Mr. Warburton off with his coat.
Certainly.
Take it and hang it on the peg downstairs.
I think I'll keep the coat. Thanks.
Oh, no, 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 you won't need your coat.
That's right.
Oh, there's nothing worse than sitting about in a heavy coat.
There we are.
Yeah, Joey, you take it away.
Righto.
But, Linda, you've been exercising. You slip that scarf about you, dearie, and draw up your chair. Well, this is going to be nice. What's nicer than friends sitting down to a bite to eat? And extra nice for you, Mr. Warburton, because you ought to be in your university, or am I mistaken?
Yes. I ought to be at Cambridge.
Fancy that. Must be exciting to break the rules so boldly. Our old life is so dull it does us good every now and then to make a little excitement. Now, Mr. Warburton, you'll change your mind and have a little snack with us? A slice of salami?
I don't think I could eat anything. I'll have a little ale.
That's right.
Madame Angelelli is having a soiree Thursday, Linda. Don't you go anymore?
No, I don't like them.
I wondered where you were last Thursday. Madame Angelelli expected you every minute.
I don't like them.
What could be keeping Joey over the kipper? Have you seen Joey on the stage, Mr. Warburton? Joey Weston, he is.
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, very fine, he's quite the best comedian in the pantos. Oh, but surely you must have seen his wife. She was Henrietta Duveau. She was the most popular soubrette in all England, and very famous she was. He lost her 2 years ago, Henrietta Duveau. Oh, everybody loved her. It was a terrible loss. Here it comes.
In holiday, girl, on an holiday bus. A nice bit of kipper and a lovely cup of tea.
Oh, what a noise. You do make Joey for fear. Anybody think you're happy about something? Well, now, Mr. Warburton, you'll excuse us if we sit down and fall right to.
Oh, it's cold here, Rowena, after the kitchen.
Yes, it's colder than I thought for. Joey, go and get Mr. Warburton's coat for him. I think he'll want it after all.
Yes, I'd better keep it by me.
How do you feel, dearie?
I hate it. I wish I were home.
Joey, this is good. You're a good cook. Ah, oh, this old theatre's seen some wonderful nights. I'll never forget you, Joey, in Robinson Crusoe the Second. I'll never forget you standing right there and pretending you saw a ghost. I hurt myself laughing.
No, it wasn't me. It was Henrietta. She sang the Sultan of Baghdad 300 times in this very house, on these very same boards. 300 times the house went crazy when she sang the houseboat song. They sit so quiet, you'd think they were holding their breath.
and then they break out into shouts and cries.
Henrietta Duvaux was my wife, Mr. Warburton. She was the best soubrette in England since Nell Gwynn.
I can hear her now, Joey. She was as good a friend as she was a singer.
After the show, I would be waiting for her on the corner, Mr. Warburton. Do you know the corner, sir?
Yes.
I did not always have an engagement. And the manager did not think it right to have a husband waiting in the theatre to take the soubrette home. So I waited for her at that corner. She slipped away from all that applause, sir, to go home with an husband that did not always have an engagement.
Joey, I won't have you saying that. You're one of the best comics in England. Oh, Joey, you're tired. Rest yourself a bit.
No, Rowena, I want to say this about her. She never felt a success. And she had an 100 ways of pretending that she was no success at all. Joey, she'd say, I got it all wrong tonight. And then she'd ask me how she ought to do it.
Do draw up a chair, Mr. Warburton, and have a bite for good feeling's sake. We're all friends here. Linda, put a piece of sausage on some bread for him. With your own hands.
Well, thanks. Thank you very much.
And when she was ill, she knew that her coffin hurt me. And she'd suffer four times over trying to hold back a coffin. Cough, Henrietta, I'd say, if it makes you more comfortable. But no, she'd act like I was the sick person that had to be taken care of. You know, sir, I read in the papers about people who shoot the people they love. I don't know what to think. What is it but that they want to be noticed? Noticed, even if they must shoot to get noticed. It's themselves. It's themselves they love.
Yes. I must go now. You've been very kind.
Joey, come downstairs with me a minute and help me open that old chest. I think we can find Henrietta's shield and spear from the Palace of Ice and other things. The lock's been broken for years.
All right, Rowena, let's look.
We won't be a minute. You two go on eating.
I won't trouble you any more, Linda. I want you to be happy. That's all.
You don't trouble me, Arthur.
What he said is true. I want to be noticed. I wish you liked me, Linda. I wish you liked me more. I wish I could prove to you that I'd do anything for you. That I could bring to you all that he was describing. I won't be a trouble to you anymore. I can prove it to you, Linda. I've been waiting at that corner for hours, just walking up and down. And I planned, Linda, to prove that I couldn't live without you. And if you were going to be cold and didn't like me, Linda, I was going to shoot myself right here. To prove to you...
He puts the revolver on the table.
To prove to you... But you've all been so kind to me. And that Mr. Weston, he told about his wife. I think just loving isn't wasted.
Arthur, I wish you wouldn't.
I imagine I'm young still. Goodbye. And thanks. Goodbye.
He hurries out. Linda shudders with distaste, peers at the revolver, and presently is sketching steps again when Joey and Rowena return.
Was that he that went out? What happened, Linda?
He said goodbye forever. He left the gun to prove to me something or other. Thank you for nothing.
Linda! I hope you said a nice word to him.
Thank you for nothing, I said.
Well, young lady, you're only 16. Wait till your turn comes. We'll have to take care of you.
Don't let's talk about it. It makes me tired. So hot and excited and breathing so hard. Mario would never act like that. Mario doesn't even seem to notice you when you're there.
Linda goes back to practicing her steps, and Joey and Rowena sit down to supper again as the curtain falls.
You've been listening to Queens of France and Love and How to Cure It by Thornton Wilder, the second in this year's Bell Canada reading series from the Shaw Festival. They were both directed by Dennis Johnston. In Queens of France, you heard David Leshon as the narrator and Guy Bannerman as Cahusac, with Fiona Byrne as Mademoiselle Cresseau, Goldie Semple as Mademoiselle Poitvin, and Helen Taylor as Mademoiselle Pujol. In Love and How to Cure It, you heard Helen Taylor as the narrator, Guy Bannerman as Joy, and Fiona Byrne as Linda, David Leshon as Arthur, and Goldie Semple as Rowena. The Bell Canada Reading Series is recorded live at the Royal George Theatre in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario, with special thanks going to Bill Talbot, Jim Smagata, and Jane Osborne. The recording engineer was Wayne Richards, and the producer of the Bell Canada Reading Series is Barbara Worthy. That's it for tonight. Tune in next week for Charles Williams' metaphysical thriller, The Place of the Lion, when we return with more plays from the Shaw Festival. If you would like to send us a letter, please address it to Monday Night Playhouse, Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6, and send emails to sunshowcase, that's one word, sunshowcase@toronto.cbc.ca. I'm Damiano Pietropaolo, and you've been listening to Monday Night Playhouse on CBC Radio 2.